Unicorn Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black radio.
This is in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in the United States. We stand with you.
Lift every voice and sing till
Ashe, out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, I say. We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand, and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions, the children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, Muhammad,
John Henry Clark, John
Dr. Khaled
Jackson,
Muhammad.
Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name. Ashe.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
In order for you and me to devise some kind of method or strategy to offset some of the events or a repetition of the events that have taken place here in Los Angeles recently, we have to go to the root. We have to go to the cause. Dealing with the condition itself is not enough. And it is because of our effort toward getting straight to the root that people oftentimes think we are dealing in hate. We are oppressed. We are exploited. We are downtrodden. We are denied not only civil rights, but even human rights. So the only way we're going to get some of this oppression and exploitation away from us or aside from us is come together against a common enemy. Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate? You should ask yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you? And I, for one, as a Muslim, believe that the white man is intelligent enough. If he were made to realize how black people really feel and how fed up we are without that old compromise and sweet talk. Stop sweet talking it. Tell him how you feel. Tell him how, what kind of hell you've been catching, and let him know that if he's not ready to clean his house up, if he's not ready to clean his house up, he shouldn't have a house. It should catch on fire and burn down.
will attack, and you don't want that.
You are listening to Elders of Sankofa with host the Elders. The Elders of Sankofa radio broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, which operates on the timeforawakening.com radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa_think@out.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.timeforawakening.com, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Hello, my Sankofa family. Thank you. This is your brother Kwazi, saying hello to everyone out there, to our listeners. Today's show, Martial Arts, a Science for Everybody. The Sankofa elders and guests will discuss the role that martial arts has in preparing all of us to be warriors for our survival. The African ancestry Mayat principle of balance and the Nusagusaga principle, Nia, purpose, are important concepts for our survival. Our guests, Deidre Cole, Judge Charles Warren, and retired Sergeant Tony Hendricks. Before we go into that, we have Sister Dee Dee Conley, and she's going to go with our ancestral profile. Sister Dee Dee?
Yes, sir, I'm here, and thank you so much. Hello, my brothers and sisters. This is going to be time for a short one. And this is going to, since Brother Kwesi is going to be talking about martial arts, I thought I would just say a little bit about this fine brother, brother that probably a lot of us haven't even heard about. I'm sure we didn't get this one in school or in our story, not even in his story. But anyway, he was the African Black Samurai. And I believe, okay, and his name was Yasu, I believe. Am I saying that right, Brother Kwesi?
Yasu.
Yes. Okay, anyway, it was something Yasu was born as a part of the Dinka tribe in the 1550s in what is now South Sudan. He was sold as a child slave in traffic. Yasu means the black one in Japanese. He was a slave who traveled to Japan in members of one of the several Italian missionary groups that arrived in Japan during the, who arrived in Japan in 1579. It's also possible that, Yakus may have been a part of the Dinka tribe from South Sudan, who was famous for their height and extremely dark skin. The people are, the Dinka people are among the tallest in Africa and have darker skin than the Ethiopians. And the reason why I said the Ethiopians, because I guess some of the scholars had said that he may have been Ethiopian or Somalian. And then they say also that some of the deacon men, I guess their ritual and custom was like drawing decorative patterns on their face or tattooing. But there was no account of Yazuka having any facial patterns or any tattooing or whatever on his face, they say. Wasn't none of that recorded. And then also I found really kind of strange, too, where they said the first African Samurai, he was 6 foot tall, and he was an African slave landed in Japan. He stuck out, they say, like a sore thumb. People lost all modesty and and nearly caused a stampede trying to get to see him when he arrived in Japan. And it was such a sight. He was one of the first Africans to arrive on the island, that the powerful Japanese warlord ordered him to remove his coat while a flock of servants tried to scrub the black ink off his skin. He was the world's first African black cimarron. And a lot of times when we mention martial arts and stuff like that, we, you know, right away people think about either the karate movies or you think about Bruce Lee and all of them. But no, we were in there. The African cimarron. And I always feel like also martial arts also brings about, I think, a lot of discipline. It brings about discipline because you, to me, you must have discipline because you're going to, wow, that's going to be a lot of exercising to me. You must have to take care of your body. I don't know, but you got to learn how to eat right and stay strong and take care of your body. But this African cimarron, you know they were going to try to have Chadwick Boseman play him, which I believe that would have been great. God rest that brother's soul. And this wonderful black cimarron, he may have, they think he may have died in 1582. It's just, they have like a lot of, I really don't want to say stories, but it's a lot of stuff kind of like out there on him, and you just have to decipher. So sometimes it's all about who's telling us about our people. And I feel this is, I always like to hear our African people tell us about our people. But I'm going to turn it over to Brother Kwesi. And if you all get the chance, please look this African cimarron brother up. This was, it's just wonderful. And we should know our culture. Because we're all over the world. And in some of everything, all over the world. Thank you so much. Brother Kwesi, I'll turn it over to you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Sister Daisy. And thank you for the profile.
You very welcome.
Okay. All right, I'm going to start out, no specific order, but, Master Charles Warren. I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. Hometown, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He started, his judo training with a close friend and father, Mr. Jones, in 1964. And in 1966, he entered the U.S. Air Force. In 1967, he was stationed, at Kirtland AF Base in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and started training in Kenpo Karate. And in 1968, he started Kenpo Gojo Ryu training while still in the service stationed in Japan. Now, after returning home from Vietnam in 1970, he started teaching karate at the Northside YMCA in Milwaukee. Then Kenpo Gojo School of Karate was founded and became the first African-American dojo. Now, from 1976 to 78, he was Milwaukee police officer, and in 1978 moved on to the Wisconsin State Patrol and eventually was promoted to sergeant and retired in 2002. In 2007, he became the first African-American police chief in Palmyra, Wisconsin, until 2012. He's the FBI National Academy graduate, former international law enforcement trainer for Kosovo, a former regional training commander in the heart of Afghanistan. And in 2020 marked 50 years of the martial arts instruction of thousands of students around the globe. The head of several Kenpo Gojo dojos, including the Milwaukee, Hudson, Palmyra, and Strippy Dojo in Yugoslavia. And in 2019 inducted into the BKF, Ancient Alpha Warrior Hall of Fame. Currently serving as the village judge in Palmyra, and that's Mr. Charles Warren. And I just have to say I've met you several times Pastor Warren, and the last time I think we had a little lunch while we were waiting to get our car windows fixed.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and then I also have one of your other students, Deidre Cole, and I'm going to get to her in a second. But when we met getting the windows taken care of, I got a chance to get you some lunch. And I think that was your first, what was that sandwich we had?
Remember.
Hello. We're trying to do the healthy thing. We're trying to do the healthy thing. But anyway, I'm just lost. I can't get to the resume, so I'm going to ask Deidre, could you just give me a bio on yourself, if you don't mind?
Wow. Good evening, everybody. Yes, my name is Deidre Cole, and you did have that correct. I am one of Mr. I'm his favorite student. Let's just get that. Mr. Warren has been my instructor since I was a child, like 9 years old. And I'm 55 now, so that can kind of help you paint that picture. You know, we go way, way, way back. And martial arts has been a very integral part of my life and of my journey from then until now. A little bit about me. Of course, I'm also born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Grew up on 10th and Capitol Drive. Went to elementary school, middle school, high school, did all that in Milwaukee. And I did also join the Milwaukee Police Department, and where I served as a police officer and also a police detective with the city of Milwaukee. Let's see, I have two wonderful children, and currently I'm residing in Atlanta, Georgia. And let's see what else. And everybody that's on this line, I have some sort of connection to. So I'm just honored to be here. So, it's me. I'm
Deidre. All right. Thank you. Thank you. And then we also have retired Sergeant Tony Hendricks. You want to give a little bio on yourself?
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Tony Hendricks, and I'm a retired Milwaukee Police Sergeant. I've lived in Milwaukee my entire life. After high school, I enlisted into the Marine Corps, where I traveled all over the world. After my stint in the Marine Corps, I also joined the Milwaukee Police Department, where I've eventually retired and still living in the city of Milwaukee.
Okay, well, thank you, thank you. You know, our focus today, we want to talk, you heard the words of Malcolm X, and one of the things that stuck with me was, when he says, and I quote, "It doesn't mean that I advocate violence, but at the same time, I am not against using violence in self-defense. And I don't call it violence. I call it intelligence." And so I'm going to open it up to, I guess I'll start with you, Mr. Warren. When we talked about martial arts, and I mean, I read about you started off in judo and so forth, but what really got you motivated to that, and what did it do for you? I mean, there are so many different areas that people talk about with martial arts. A lot of time when people talk martial arts, they're thinking it just means you're learning how to fight. You heard Sister Dee talk about discipline. I mean, there's other aspects of martial arts. I know that there's healing, and there's a way that people are supposed to carry themselves. So if you can elaborate on that a bit.
Sure. Good evening, everybody. My name is Mr. Warren. I got involved in judo because a friend of mine's father, Mr. Jones, encouraged me and several other young men to participate in that particular activity. And I enjoyed the discipline and the structure of that activity. And as time went on, I kind of understood that you don't have to be strong, you don't have to be wild, but if you're structured and disciplined, you are able to succeed in most of your endeavors. And I guess as I became involved, more involved in the judo aspect of it, I looked for other areas of martial arts to get involved in, which happened when I joined the service.
Awesome, awesome. Sister Didi, I know that you got involved in martial arts. You being a woman, is that something that, I don't know, was that difficult for you? Was there a lot of women in the martial arts when you went through it?
You speaking to me, to Deidre?
Yes.
Okay. Well, when I first started, there were not a lot of women. There were some, but there weren't a lot. Of course, nowadays there seems to be a lot more women that are involved and getting involved in martial arts, and I think that it helped to the fact that I trained also most of the time I trained with mostly guys, and that helped to, you know, help me in my development and learning how to defend myself and protect myself, and so that was really an advantage for me. And so because I've been doing it for so long, you know, it's just become a way of life for me. It's like in every area of my life, and it helped with discipline and, you know, being able to stay, you know, physically fit, you know, throughout the years, and to just, you know, in everything that I've done, even on the police department, you know, it just helps me to be prepared pretty much for life. So I would encourage every woman and every girl to find somewhere to train, because I think that I know my life would be probably a lot different had martial arts not been such an integral part, had my dad not made the choice to take me and my brothers at that time to Mr. Warren's class back in 1974, whenever it was, to join and start that class. And it was just, it just put my life on the course to, you know, to the journey to where I am now, and I give martial arts and Mr. Warren huge credit for that. Thank you, Mr. Warren.
Yes, I have to also thank you, Mr. Warren. I wasn't a member of your school per se, but I did get a chance to visit many times with one of your students. I don't know if you remember Eddie Moore.
Yes, Big Eddie. Yes.
Yeah, Big Eddie. We used to work together, and we did security, and we would go to the school at night after we got off work, maybe 10 o'clock. So I guess you had an open relationship with a lot of your students where people had keys to Kempo Gojo.
Yes.
And I guess the other thing I wanted to ask, I know you've been in the military. Tony, you've been in the military.
Yes.
And all three of you have been on the police department. And the training that you get in the martial arts, you think that has helped you? I know in my case, you know, I have a calmness about me when I'm facing different crises. I'm not, I'm paying attention to details. I'm not out of sorts. You know, I'm able to keep myself, in a good place. And a lot of that is from the discipline, from a lot of the training that we did. And have you guys recall situations where that helped you? And I'll go with Tony. Any job-related situations?
Well, you know, there's been several. You know, I'm not a martial artist practitioner. Basically, you know, I've had the honor and opportunity to be around and associated with some of my coworkers who were involved in the martial arts. But I always admire the way they handle themselves in situations where, you know, if it went down, they knew that they could handle the situation. But they always took the approach of de-escalating, calm, trying to influence, get that individual to see that it was in his or her best interest to cooperate or comply. And so I think that's a testament of the discipline that you learn in the martial arts.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. I know for myself, the discipline has worked a lot, but, you know, when we look at a lot of the training, a lot of the use of force issues, And even when I've dealt with making arrests on a lot of people, and I still have a relationship with a lot of people in a lot of these different gyms, and I know a lot of people that are practitioners of the martial arts, and I don't have a large number of those people being arrested for use of force situations, although they're very skilled, but there's some other aspects that where they feel that they don't need to prove a point by hurting and harming, and that's not a big part of the martial arts. That's something that you can do in a situation where you need to protect yourself, but outside of that, that's just not how people walk. Have you noticed that to be true with any of your students or most people you meet? I know, Mr. Warren, you traveled and taught all over the world. Is it different in other places, or is it very combative, or what? We talk about the martial arts and people that have learned and how they treat other people, how they engage.
Well, you know, in martial arts, in most martial arts, the environment is of respect for each other. And the discipline portion, especially for me, working with Milwaukee PD, State Patrol, et cetera, a lot of confidence in my ability that I could handle myself. So there was no reason for me to talk condescending to anybody, just treat them with respect if respect was given back. And I can say I got over 30 years of law enforcement experience here in the United States and abroad, and never had to put my hand on anybody in all those years, even though I was fully capable of, and some of my peers encouraged me to. But because of my martial art background and control, discipline, and treating people with respect, I never had to do nothing like that. And I expect that out of my students, to try to emulate the things that I learned and trying to give them the same type of knowledge and experience.
Well, Deidre, now I should be calling.
Yes.
How do I pronounce it? I mean, you're Seventh Dan. Do I just say Seventh Dan, or is there another? Is it Shion or Shion Cole?
Deidre is fine. Deidre is fine.
Okay. I know. I mean,
that's what my mama named me.
Okay, all right. I'm just want to make sure. I don't want to get a chop across the neck.
No, wrong.
I know how some systems
are. Well, you know what? As far as that goes, though, and like, as far as the rank goes, I was recently promoted through my instructor here in Atlanta, CJO Steve Muhammad, who stepped down in October. But like Mr. Warren always taught us, you know what you know. So I don't really trip on the whole, the title and all that. I'm grateful. But calling me Deidre or Miss Cole or Sensei Deidre, I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Well, I appreciate that. So in your situation, just you being out there on the streets, even though you're a martial artist, but you're still female. And
yes. People,
they just look at you a certain way. I mean, I've seen it when we had a female, our first female, when I was on the police department in Cudahy, and I rode with her and I backed her up several times, but and she carried herself pretty decent, but people were willing to confront her more aggressively just because, and I don't know, have you dealt with situations like that? Not only just being a female, but being a black female.
Oh, yeah, we had a double whammy over there, right? Female and black female. Of course, I was in situations like what you just described. But then if I could piggyback off of what Mr. Warren said, martial arts does teach you a lot about, self-respect and character and that kind of thing. And even when situations get escalated or whatever, a lot of times it was always actually it was a good thing for a woman to arrive on the scene, because women naturally, and no disrespect to the guys, but, we naturally have more of a mothering instinct, or just a way of being able to de-escalate, Well, I know there's some macho type women that, want to, deal with, people like the fellas do or whatever, but I didn't have a real big problem, not too often, because I was able to talk to people and able to, de-escalate, and I was confident about being able to handle myself too, but I didn't, go there with this whole, attitude or whatever, looking to,
whatever. Of course, my main objective was to go home, you know, but by the grace of God, and like I said, with my training and the skills that I had as far as being able to use the verbal judo and being able to talk to people and treat people like they're human beings, first and foremost, you know, the way that I want to be treated, you know, that helped me to work in my favor so that I never either had to put my hands on anyone. So I can really relate to what he said there. I believe martial arts was a big help to me in that way.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm going to take a moment just to thank our sponsor, EDOC Advice. It is a website created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. The questions are answered by health professionals and those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health that make sense to you. It is at www.evocadvice.com. Now, we do not replace your health professional or provide your care, but we can help you become a better consumer so that you can get the best information to make a truly informed decision. Now, we network with other health professionals throughout the country and bring that information to you. Sponsors are welcome. And if you have a service you want others to know about, written a book, we need to read, consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at sankofathink@outlook.com. Thank you. Deidre, you said you, how long were you on Milwaukee as a detective?
I did 10 years with Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then you you spent some programs in at all? Were you initiating any programs? I mean, because you were a detective and you were dealing with, were you in the homicide division?
I was violent crime. Sometimes they did turn into homicide. Yeah.
Okay.
So when I was a police officer, I was able to start a martial arts program through the PAL program, through the police athletic, where I was able to teach children that were in the inner city community basic fundamentals of martial arts and the discipline and things like.
And Mr. Warren, you still teach and you have a school in Palmyra?
I still teach, still deal with the kids in the Palmyra area. Yeah, you bet.
I know a lot of people, I'm not going to guess me how old you are, but you're a little older than me, I think. But most people, it's what motivates you to stay out there teaching people? And the same with you, but I'll start with you, Ms. Warren, as far as why you're teaching. And, I mean, what do you see? I mean, I know if you can explain what you got out of it, but what do you see how it benefits others, and especially in law enforcement?
Yeah, I try to set the example. I'll be 74 in another month and a half, and I consider myself in real good shape. I can do 60 push-ups in 60 seconds. I can do a lot of different stuff.
Can you repeat that, please?
You heard him right. He said 6 push-ups in 60 seconds, and he can do that.
Okay. Yes. Well, no baseball. I'm not there yet, but you just set a goal for me. I'm going to be working at that.
Go slow, go easy. But mainly, I try to set the example for all my students. If you stay on task and believe in what you're learning and stick with it, well, the results are going to be positive for you. So I try to set that example.
Now, Deidre, I saw a video of your son. So, I mean, it's a family thing. You've taught him as well.
Well, yeah, they dabble in in and out and that kind of thing. But, you know, as far as the traditional training, you know, as far as being in a dojo and that kind of thing,
sure.
You know, he started a couple times, but I have taught him some on my own.
I've done the same thing with my son. And if you notice, your son's birthday is November 2nd?
November 3rd,
November 3rd. Yeah, that same day as my son.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they both have, I don't know if you caught that when we were posted and so forth, but yeah, I thought that was something special. I don't know how old your son is, but mine is 22.
My son, he told me that if I told his age, he would delete me from all his
old... No, not yet. No problem. No problem. I understand. Yeah, I just put it out there.
He's a little older than that, though.
Okay. So the martial arts, I know on your podcast you were talking, you have one of your other martial arts, Tenth Dan, Mrs. Rita King, and she was talking about the healing, and how do you see that with the martial arts?
Most
people, when they think about it, you know, they think about fighting and punches and kicks and how to take somebody down, but, you know, it's also a healing art.
It's so much more. It's like, to me, it's the way that I look at it, it's all mind, body, and spirit, you know, where it all comes mm-hmm. together, you know, and that's why we're able to, help people to, because it is a very therapeutic thing now. So for some people that have like recently started training, the feedback that I get is like, wow, I wish I would have been doing this all along, because, you know, it's a way to release your, frustrations. It's a way to, you know, to get your peace or whatever, you know, it's so many wonderful things about it. And yes, Sister Rita and I, we were talking. Sister Rita is one of Steve Muhammad's higher ranking female students, and she's been training for a long time. And, she started her training, as a result of some things that had occurred in her life to, you know, to gain her power back, to empower her. And so now she's able to, empower other girls and women and that kind of thing by teaching them martial arts and being able to help them to feel confident about being able to defend and protect themselves and that kind of thing. So it's all encompassing to the whole body. And that's what we talked about.
You know, one of the things that I just kind of have to point this out, when I think about martial arts, then I think about even doing the job and from the law enforcement perspective, because that's all of us. And, you know, and there's a lot of people that are on the police department that have a martial arts background. And when I look at that, along with the training that they get, you know, how do you justify a lot of these use of force where, you know, a person is being hit, or, you know, your use of force, you're using a baton, or even shooting sometimes. And I know a lot of times, and I don't know if that's a tricky question right now, Mr. Warren, because, you know, you're still a judge. You know, when you think about it, like, you know, the verdict that was just passed with Jacob Blake, and I think about the close proximity. If I was that close to somebody, I wouldn't have been thinking about shooting somebody, especially walking behind somebody as close as I was, as an officer was to them. And if they really wanted to take that person down, I don't understand why he felt he needed to shoot him.
You know, I've discussed that same subject with a bunch of folks in the profession. Mm-hmm. And as a police instructor with defensive tactics and whatnot, the problem that I see, and this is my opinion, most police officers are not involved in any physical activity other than golf, handball, tennis, things of those types of activities. And they don a uniform, they carry a service revolver, they go to work. They get into a situation where they have to make a decision because of their inactivity in the physical area. They're not very secure about putting their hands on
mm-hmm.
an individual. And what happens is that they go to the second decision, that is, pull your firearm. And in a blank situation, I was appalled when I saw the video, but I also, as a judge, know that district attorneys have to look for elements of a particular charge. And if they don't have the elements, they can't charge. And basically, that's what it amounted to. I don't understand why the other officers on the scene didn't get involved and take that man down and restrain him.
Exactly.
Probably because they themselves were not secure within themselves to be able to do that, even though they have in-service training and they go through defensive tactics training
right
once or twice a year, and it goes no further than that. So it's unfortunate that we lost one of our brothers in that regard, but the reality of it is a lot of the police officers who don uniforms are not capable of handling themselves because they don't pursue any type of training other than what's required from their districts and their police requirements. And a lot of times supervisors, administrators themselves don't get involved. So therefore, there's no one really setting the stage and showing a good example. And then you have the union that will kill some of that kind of stuff too. So
yeah,
it's just unfortunate.
It really is. I just want to, can I chime in when Mr. Warner's done on that?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Just to give another perspective, and I totally agree with everything that he said, excuse me, but then it's also interesting to me how so many can pick and choose when they're able to use the restraint and when they're not. And excuse me, and I wonder if Mr. Blake was of a different persuasion, if that same restraint would have been somehow used. And I probably would have to say, just based on everything that's going on, it's a high likelihood. So we got a whole nother issue too. And that's just playing out itself on, you know, in America over the last couple of days with everything that's going on. It's just like, you know, a veil is coming off now, you know, and it's just like it's some other deep rooted things inside that people have not wanted to deal with or address. And now we've got this big monster. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I agree.
Yeah.
If I can also chime in, and Mr. Warren and Dietra, I thought that you guys were 100% spot on in your assessment. And, you know, from my perspective, you know, I think I would have to look at it from a training aspect, because you look at the training that I think most police departments do, and it's like a sensitized, if that makes sense, where, you know, everything is regimented, is by the numbers, instead of making the training close to reality as possible, if that makes sense. And I think that's the problem within the police department today. And also, Mr. Warren, to the point that you made regarding physical training, you know, they just don't take it serious that you might have to put hands on. So you need to be prepared. You need to be ready. And you go and you look at the fact that, and just to give you some perspective here, some context, if I may. At one time, the police department, Milwaukee, was going to make physical training where you had to get so many hours of physical right. training in. And if you didn't, you could be decertified as a police officer. Well, there you go again with the union who pushed back against it. Where I thought that was a great idea, because not only if you look at it from the perspective of being able to handle yourself on the street, but improving your quality of life. So I think that the departments need to get into the thinking that we need to make our training, physical training, where you have to put hands on, more reality-based.
You know, I'm in 100% agreement with a lot of what was said. The training part throws me because, like you were saying, Deidre, when people are generally under a different persuasion, they seem to remember how to use all those waves of caution and care and consideration. An example of that would be the young lady in, I think that was Minnesota, when they kicked their door down. They were at the wrong house, and she was naked, and they just rammed through there. I'm not exactly sure what city that was.
Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. Yeah, that's right, Chicago. And you know, and you can go on countless of stories like that. But usually when they deal with someone, or we can take even the situation in the White House, it's just no way that we wouldn't have been shot down. That it just wouldn't have happened that way. And so many of us know that. And then they kind of rolled out some different information saying it was Antifa and these weren't really Trump people. And then after that, didn't work. And, you know, they're still kind of watering it down. And then you have an officer that was killed. And initially, and I'm not 100% sure how this officer died. First, they initially said he had some type of cardiac arrest, due to the stress. And then later it was said that he was beaten. So I am not sure, but, you know, just the way it's looked upon and the way that information was put out there. So, yeah, that's something in itself. And, you know, so yeah. We know that there's the difference in how they look at justice.
Exactly.
And I guess we just have to be real about that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, we have to be, because, you know, policing is looked at, like you said, differently depending on a lot of times what the race is, what your race is, you know, and you know, there's no way of getting around it other than to having the discussions about it, because I believe that's why we are in such a predicament now, is because so many times people do not want to talk about it, but it's happening, and it's happening more and more frequently. So until we really start having these real discussions about how we're going to deal with it, you know, because we're tired of seeing the same story over and over again play out. When, you know, that could be either any one of our children, it could be us. It could be
exactly,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm always thinking about that, and you know, so, and I tell my son, my daughter, and I say, if you ever get pulled over, give me a call. I'm coming. If I'm at work, whatever, I'm leaving and I'm going. I mean, that's just how I feel. And, you know, and it's sad. It has to be scary like that. But, you know, we have to do things different because we're treated different.
Exactly.
And that's what we have to understand.
Exactly.
All right. We're going to be going to a station break in a few minutes. And so when we come back, we're going to open up the line for callers. And we're going to hear from, I have Ricky here on standby, so we'll get his thoughts on the last question in regards to the things that just recently occurred. And I just appreciate you guys for being here, and I just thank you. And again, we'll be back shortly after the station break.
It's a very serious subject, and so naturally my response has to be a very serious response. There are those who speak of police review boards, and there are many police review boards throughout North America. There are many police review boards that allegedly are set up to monitor the activity of the policing agency. And certainly some good has come out of police review boards, but I do not believe that police review boards can deal with the high level of police brutality in the black community. Of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. If we know what happened yesterday, then we can...
Ajalai. Jalorum Winnie, Winnie, me bear my answer. Afifi, GG, Foufou, léger. Yawa, oh yao, ache.
Iba, oh ya, achalaya, achaloru. Winnie, winnie, me bear my answer. Afifi, sheshe, efufu, leshe. Yawao, oyao, ashe.
Iba, oya, ajalai.
Time for an Awakening Media lineup. Monday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspective, with host Brother Oshi, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Same time, same place. Continued Monday lineup, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, with host Brother Jihad Ahmed, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central, host Dr. Mawia Kambon and Sister Nataki Kambon. 9 p.m. till 10 p.m. Conversation Reparation, first and third Mondays. On Tuesday, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Thursday, 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., Melanin Live with host Lance Jones. For host Boniswa Ayan. Fridays, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Time for an Awakening, with creator of Time for an Awakening and host, Brother Elliot, co-hosted by Brother Richard. Saturday, 4 p.m. till 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk, with host Wanda Chambers. 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., The Elders of Sankofa. And Sunday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and co-host Brother Richard. Check us out, get informed, and get
informed. You are listening to Elders of Sankofa with host The Elders. The Elders of Sankofa radio broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, which operates on the timeforawakening.com radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa_think and out.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.awakening.com, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Hey, family, we are back. This is your host, Kwasi Malimo. We have our guests.
This is Grandma. Shoes, but that's all right. I didn't want to wear my house.
Hello? Okay. Again, this is your host again, Kwasi Malimo. We have Grandmaster Warren and DJ and Tony Hendricks, and we're going to continue with some of the comments, and we're going to also open up the line for questions and comments, and that's going to be 215-490-9832. But I was going to have Ricky, who's here, to make some comments on the last conversation we had in regards to that Jacob Blake situation.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hello, Mr. Warren, and hello, Deidre. I had the honor of having you in my lives at various times. Of course, Deidre was my partner for a few years, and we fought many battles together. But I just wanted to make this comment. I'm disturbed by the things that I see in policing today as far as the use of force, and I've had many conversations with officers, especially black officers, about this. And as I've looked for information, you know, what you find is that the culture of policing, the history of policing lies in slave catching. Even if you look at some of the badges, they look very similar to the badges that slave catchers wore. But more importantly, is that same attitude, that same oppressive attitude towards black people, that same dehumanizing attitude towards black people exists today. I mean, when you think about shooting somebody in the back 7 times, before you do that, the first thing that you have to do is you have to dehumanize them. You have to see them as an object instead of a human being that, you know, has people that love and care about them. And then you act recklessly in a manner that takes their lives or injures them. So, you know, before we make reform in policing, we have to make some admissions. And I've been working with Brother Kwasi in the martial arts, and I must say it has been both a physical and a spiritual journey for me. And, you know, what he says repeatedly is true is that, you know, if you have just certain minimal skills, it can save lives because then you won't have to pick up, that firearm. You'll be able to handle that situation either verbally or with, minimal, physical action. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Ricky. This is very interesting. You know, I think, and I put myself in that situation being an officer, and it's just no way I wouldn't have just took him down. You know, like I said, they were in perfect position to gain total control over him, so I don't understand why they didn't. I understand. I saw that he had his gun out, but he could have easily reholstered it and then took him down. That just throws me. And I know, Mr. Warren, you had said that, you know, they made that decision that it was justified based on, I'm not a little clear from that because they felt he was going for a weapon. Mr. Warren?
Bob, the 21 foot rule. When it deals with a knife.
I think I saw something fall down on the ground as he was going to the car. But again, when his back is to them,
I just don't understand why they didn't, you know, so that just throws me. And I've seen worse situations where you've had white men with guns and they've have taken them down without firing a shot.
Absolutely.
Black men that were unarmed and they deemed them to be a threat where they felt they needed to use deadly force and shot that person. And so we have I think that was a Terrence Pritchard. There was another situation where the young man that was in the car with his girlfriend and baby, that was in Minnesota.
Minnesota,
I
correct.
I can't think of that kid's name offhand, but Philando Castile. Okay. So, I mean, we just have so much of that going on. And so I know they want to talk police reform. Training does make a difference, and I'm in 100% agreement when you say that they don't do anything else, and a lot of the training has been watered down. I mean, you can't, the requirements and the standards in which they have to go through to become a police officer, as far as running or climbing a wall, I mean, a lot of that stuff they took out. Matter of fact, he said in some of the things you could have a personal trainer sign off on you that you can perform that, and that's good enough. So
wow.
They've watered things down in regards to. And I know that because being retired, I went into Milwaukee Police Department and I took the test. I took the written test, and then so I qualified to for the next phase of it. But because of all the turmoil and everything that was going on, I just backed out. And I just didn't see myself doing that. I wanted to try to make a difference and do something in the city of Milwaukee. I was in the city of Cudahy. And I got a chance to spend a lot of time in Milwaukee just doing different things. Because I did ride around on a volunteer basis with the GRIPS unit. And so I don't know if you know about that, Mr. Warren, the Gun Retention Intervention Program.
Yes.
And I think Sheriff Clark started that.
Correct.
I think that was probably one of the best things that he did. We took guns up. We took guns off the street every night that I went. I rode with them on my days off, and we'd pull people over for something and ask, and if they had a warrant, we'd say, if you know somebody that's got some guns and they probably shouldn't have them, let us know, and maybe we'll let you go on your warrant, and we'll take them down to the station, let them sit, and check out the information, and if the information works out, we release them. But, you know, there were several times where we got lots of guns off the streets, and so that made
that
a difference.
The best thing.
That program, huh?
That was the best thing. Now young men walk around knowing that they're not going to be harassed or FI'd, et cetera, so they carry.
Yeah. A matter of fact, that's one of the reasons I left the DA's department office. I was working down there as a process server. And so I'm serving subpoenas. And so you got people walking around with guns, and they're drunk, and they got the long magazines, the stems, you know, with 30 rounds, and they got sweatpants on. It's just hanging loose, ready to fall. And I'm like, I'm just going to take this gun from this guy because I'm not going to give him an opportunity. But, you know, there were just so many situations and things. It was just too ugly, and I just said, it's time for me to move on. And so I left about 3 months ago.
Okay.
And so now I'm back to doing private security, but I'm doing that only because I want to be in a position where I can protect myself if I have to use deadly force, if I have to turn to a firearm. And when I was a process server, I couldn't carry any weapons. So that's a little different now.
Yeah.
I'm not as good as Deidre, but at one point, you know, I think I'm going to come down here and try and learn some things so I can, we're all going to come during the summer. Make that trip.
You guys are welcome.
I appreciate it. And actually, I don't know what your schedule is like. And if somebody wanted to reach you, Mr. Warren, in regards to going to your school or training with you, how would they be able to do that?
You got my number. The door is always open. we enjoy having folks from different arts come in and practice and play. So doors are open.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. And DJ, now you wrote a book and, yes. Glimpses of a Warrior Within. I've read that several times. I tell you what, there's some things I'm mad about. I may talk to you about it a little later. Find out who this person is and I'll take care of that situation. if it wasn't already done yet.
It's already.
Yeah, I figured so. Man.
Thank you so much for supporting. You bought several of my books, and I appreciate that. And that's what I released that book on my birthday on June 7th, and now I'm kind of extending it over to a podcast.
Okay.
The Glimpses of the Warrior Within Martial Arts podcast, where I interview different martial arts warriors and, you know, survivors and, I'm going to be bringing all you guys on there too to just talk about stuff we're talking about now, and just letting people share their personal story and journey, and hope to inspire somebody that's listening out there just how relative and how vital and important it is to to train and to even if whatever age you, it doesn't matter, because I have one gentleman that I'm going to be interviewing tomorrow. And he just recently started training his 82-year-old mom. And I know Mr. Warren.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I think anybody can get in it and it will change your life around, So, thank you for supporting me with the book. And maybe before we hang up, I can just give the link to anybody that might want to.
Oh, no, definitely. I want you to do that. And so again, opening up the lines for calls or questions or comments, you can call the Black Reality Think Tank at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832.
We may have a guest at 414-238. Is that someone who has a comment for us or a question? You could press your star, and that brings you off, or take your mute off. 414-364. 414-238
414-231. Okay, well, if we don't have any questions,
we can have a question for our
place. Hello? I said, yeah. Yes, I'm here.
Yes, I have a question. I would like to know, the young man that was shot 7 times, he had 3 young children in the back seat, and I'm kind of like with you, there was no way this guy was even holding on to this boy's shirt. You mean to tell me there's no way he and those other officers couldn't have took him down without shooting him? And then speaking of martial arts, you mean to tell me, there was nothing else they could have done but shot him with 3 young children in the back seat. There have been people where they have been arrested because they had guns in the home and with children in the house. But here, this boy had these 3 babies with him, and this officer still took time to just load this boy up. And another thing, I don't know how many people saw the other night when those terrorists attacked on the Capitol, and they chased the one black cop up the steps. I mean, I just don't understand, where was any type of security then, when in Kenosha, you had everybody and his brother there, the National Guards, Army, Marine, helicopters, but you had nothing for those terrorist attacks over there on the Capitol. It's just so crazy. Then you have a 17-year-old
you know, walking around with a big old assault rifle on his hip, waving at the cops up in the tank. Nobody de-guns him or tackle him. It's just crazy. It's, you know, it's just so crazy.
You know,
and it just makes sick when you see stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
What's really going on?
Yeah, and that is a true concern, and that is something that we're seeing. And I guess that bothers me so much that people try and say that, well, we need to train better. I understand that training is a big part of everything that you do. But there's some common sense, and there's some compassion that people need to show. And I don't see that when you're dealing with people like us. When I say like us, I mean just African people. You know, they seem to find ways of taking people in after they shot people. And in this case, none of these, the young lady that was killed, she was barging through a window and one of the officers shot her. But for everything else that was done, they found bombs, nooses, handcuffs. So it just said that they were looking to take these people captive. And on top of that, they found feces in the offices and different places where these high-profile senators and other government officials were at. And so I don't understand. Well, I do understand. But
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's common. And we just need to know that we need to do something.
You know, with the police. I mean, you had some of those terrorist people taking pictures with the police.
And then the police
was giving them bottled water, passing them out water. They were even so much as moving the barricades and stuff out their way. I didn't see
them. There was a video of that.
Yeah, I didn't see them pass nobody. And then the police officer that they say died, they claim he got hit upside the head with a fire extinguisher. Now that's what they said on the morning news this morning. So make up your mind, which is it? I mean, you know, it's sad that this man lost his life over a terrorist attack like that, but all these different ways that this man supposed to have died, it makes you think, okay. Is it fake news? I mean, well, come on, what's going on? What happened?
Yeah.
How did he initially die?
Yeah.
I just wanted to add a point to what my brother Rick said. But yet, after all that we just saw over the last couple of days and that we've been seeing, but yet they still have a problem humanizing us. And they've been going through all of this, with defecating here and there, and all this, you know, just, you know, this. And, but you know, just barbaric activity and whatnot. But yet, when it comes to situations like, you know, life or death or deciding to use deadly force, you have a problem humanizing us. That really bothers me.
Me too.
Yeah. Me too.
It really bothers me.
Is Rick still within earshot? Is Rick around?
Yes, he is. He's right there.
And he can attest to even how him and I, you know, like he said, we worked together for some years as partners. And even on the inside, we had so much flack given to us from some of the other ones that, you know, it would just make you sick. Some of the things that they, you know, did to us, to try to do to us while we were trying to perform our jobs, and these are people that we were to work with and work under. So it's a real deep fit. It's a deep issue. It really is.
Right.
I bet it is. You all got harassed a whole lot because, for one, you all had came into, I mean, you know what? They have their own cult. They're a cult. Like they say, the Klan doesn't have to wear white robes no more. They wear all different kind of uniforms now. Most of them are blue, green, you name it. And then it's hard to see. I really feel for our black officers, you know, because you all have to deal with this gang. That's all it is a gang. It's a cult.
and you all have to deal and put up with all kind of stuff. And you never even know when one of them going to turn the gun and blow you away, because they'll do it.
Well, you know what, Miss, and thank you for that.
Sister Dee.
Thank you for that also, Miss. But if I might be able to chime in a little bit, as black officers, we caught it. But to our to the testament and strength and courage that we showed, we rose to the occasion, and we were out there, and we saw the stuff that our white counterparts did to the people to black people in the community, and we pushed back against that. In spite of some of the facts we might have gotten from black people in the community, you know, and again, I understood, you know, where, you know, sometimes they characterize us as being sellouts, Uncle Toms, and things like that, merely because we were police officers, not knowing that we're conscientious about what we did and why we were there. And that was to protect and look after the people in our communities, because we knew they were not going to get the kind of policing that people out in the suburbs would get.
That ain't
and
no secret.
So to my black brothers and sisters that were out there that performed their duties honorably, and they did it the right way, and I'm proud of that. And you know, they hold a special place in my heart because we did it right. But not only by the people, black people in the community, by all people, because that's how we operate.
Yes. Well, you know what? I just want to say I thank y'all. I love y'all. I appreciate everything you did. I mean, because you all really had your work cut out. My African black brothers and sisters in law enforcement, you had your work cut out because things weren't always on y'all's side. And I thank God y'all made it through. I mean, I appreciate y'all. Thank you for everything.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I can recall, and I'm just going to put this out to each one of you guys. They wanted to make an example out of me. Because they knew that when I got into situations, we had we go to trouble calls, we go to fight calls, and a lot of times I would talk to people while they were in the midst of a fight. I would gain control of them, and they would realize that, you know, it was better to try to talk to me, reason with me, than to try to fight me. And I didn't get bent out of shape when somebody swung at me. And I think a lot of that came from the training that I had in the martial arts. You know, I knew how to roll with punches. I knew how to just respond. It didn't take me out of order where my whole demeanor just changed. And so many times where if somebody said the wrong thing, another officer, I would see him just explode and pick up his stick and start hitting or doing something. So I know that it has helped me in dealing with situations, but I know for a while that the guys on the department, they weren't real happy about that. I was the first black officer in Cudahy. I got hired in 1989, May 15th, and there's never been another black officer, and there won't be. There's not one in South Milwaukee or St. Francis. But they knew of my capability, and a lot of times I would go on trouble calls, and I would be there by myself. A lot of officers would say that they're en route, but, you know, it takes us no longer than 3 minutes to get to most places in the city of Cudahy, and especially on Packard Avenue from the station. And so many times I was in situations where I just happened to be able to deal with it, and you know, it just worked out for me. You know, I was blessed. But I know, Mr. Warren, we had talked. You've been in situations when you were with MPD for that brief period of time.
Oh, yeah. One of the reasons why I
left the job was because of some issues dealing with my partners. I was the only black officer in District 3 in Milwaukee, and there was a lot of issues going on there that I tolerated to a point where when you saw something being done wrong, I'd speak up about it. And what happened was got set up one night and damn near got killed because I wasn't a part of the blue line, as they said. And so that told me I should get out of that business and pursue some other type of law enforcement work.
And was it just a different environment for you with the sheriff's department?
State Patrol, yes, very professional. At the time I spent in that job, 24 years, I had fun. I met a lot of good people. I was in the training at the academy. A different mode of operation for the state.
Wow. I've heard that many a times. As a matter of fact, I spoke with someone today. He said he was going to call. He wanted to talk to you, but if he didn't, just wish you well. You remember Tony Burrell?
Of course. Yeah, he's superintendent of State Patrol, of course. I mentored him.
No, that's what he said. Yeah. We worked together earlier today, but he wanted me to wish you well. But I left him the number. I thought he was going to call and give you a buzz. But yeah, he had nothing but good things to say about you. And I just wanted to add, I've worked with, Mr. Teju and Mr. Franklin. They both, because I was with, my first sensei is going to be Robert Penny.
Yes, Bob Penny, yes.
Right. And so I went all the way to Brown Belt with him. And then he got sick, and so we didn't get together that much. And then, so I remained, I think, a Brown Belt for 7 years. So all I did was just train and work out with different people at different places. But eventually, I hooked up with Mr. Franklin and Mr. Teju, and they promoted me to Black Belt. So I've been with them all up until the pandemic hit. But, it's just a blessing. And I think that so many people that I run into, just different tournaments. I've been at some Atomic Halls tournaments, but everybody speaks highly of you, and you've just had such an influence on everybody. I mean, you were their teachers, Mr. Teju, Mr. Franklin, and Mr. Sabir, the late
yes.
Mr. Sabir.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
hey, listen, Mr. Warren is an icon. Okay.
Yeah.
He is an icon. He has mentored hundreds, probably thousands of people. And, though he's low key with it and very humble, he has influenced a lot of lives for a lot of people that are doing great things in the world today started
exactly.
because of their connection and their relationship with Mr. Warren being a mentor, me being one to attest to a living testament of it.
Yeah.
Okay, that said, I have grandparent duties in a few minutes, or I'm going to have to get off this podcast. And
okay.
Deidre, you're right. You're my favorite student.
Y'all heard that now.
Wow.
This has been cyber land forever. So Gervis is going to have a fit because we all
That's right.
But he said it. All right. Love you. Take care.
Yes.
All right.
Talk to you
later. Mr. Warren. And thank you for just sharing with us and it was just awesome. I'll look to hook up with you again.
Yes, thank you. Have a good evening.
Take care, Mr. Warren.
Take care, Mr. Warren.
You bet.
All right.
Do we have a caller at 414-871? 414-871. Do we have a caller at that number?
Power
414-238. and 414-871. Well, I can use this opportunity, I hope, to ask the question, and I talked with Brother Kwasi that as an older person, I like the idea of having some skills. And what would be your best suggestion about how to select a discipline to study? And how, or are there some programs that exist in Milwaukee that we could participate in? Because I'd like to be able to surprise them and be ready. You can put me out there as a decoy, as the person who you wouldn't expect to do something. And yeah, I'd love to be there, the one to take and put hands on them.
Yeah,
I love it.
Dr.
James, what is the oath that you took?
I think it was do no harm, but it's in the context of medicine.
Okay,
and so
all right.
I wouldn't be working in medicine, but it seems like it could be a way of controlling folks. And you mentioned, Ms. Cole, about your work, and I'm just wondering, does that deter your suitor or your husband, knowing that you have these types of skills, that they're less likely to come up on you like that?
Well, maybe that's why I don't have one. I don't know. But, but no. No, I don't think that it would deter, you know, somebody who is confident about who they are. You know, I don't think it would deter them at all. As a matter of fact, I know a lot of husband and wives that train together, and, you know, that have, you know, a lifestyle of martial arts that they do together, and that seems to be a great combination and work out really well. So now, if you were in Atlanta, I would love to train you. But since, like, that, with you being in Milwaukee, I know that I would always recommend Kenpo Goju. My home base is Kenpo Goju. I'm going to put that plug in right quick. That's my home base, yeah. 1812 West Atkinson Avenue, where we got Sensei mm-hmm. Skip over there. He is, to me, one of the best instructors around, and he would be a great resource for you. And I'm sure, you know, with Brother Kwasi as well. And, you know, just a lot of phenomenal. Milwaukee has a lot of hidden gems.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of hidden gems. And, but yeah, so that would be a great start, you know, to check out one of Mr. Warren's dojos over there in Milwaukee at 1812 West Atkinson Avenue. You can give them a call. And, or just, you know, you can decide too, because they can, you know, create something that's, you know, suited to what your need is. If you just want to, you know, just, you know, get in better physical, you know, shape as far as getting your building your wind up, or, you know, whatever the case might be, or you just want to learn self-defense. I mean, there's some self-defense courses that you can take, because believe it or not, it is, some very, 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 simple things that can be taught that are deadly. You know, how to use your cell phone, how to use, you know, your keys, or how to, you know, just simple things that, you know, if people might think it might take a lot of agility to learn how to do this at this age or whatever. But no, it's about what you said. It's about being able to take somebody at the element of surprise and knowing where to strike and where to hit them at to stop that threat, so you can either get away or finish them off or whatever you need to do. So I'm going to start doing some more online classes again, too, so I can, you know, forward to the information. But anyway, so, yeah, so there's a lot of resources for you.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if that's a sign of pathology for those people who express a desire to have that type of contact and to disarm them. But I know that that certainly is something that goes through my mind very often, even if I were to come into a confrontation with police. Would I attempt something of that nature, or would that just not be such a good idea since they've got the ability to shoot me?
I was just going to say, Dr. James, they ain't going to do nothing but shoot us anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know...
That's the point.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, at some point you have an opportunity. And whether you see to take advantage of that, most people hesitate. But like I said, as a martial artist and from my years of training, and you don't get good at anything until you practice. And things are always going to be a little different based on who you're dealing with and yourself. I mean, your art has to grow with your age. I mean, there's just so many levels and dimensions, and you have people that have a one-sidedness in the way they think. Everything needs to be done this way. No, I have a little more flexibility. It just needs to be done. So it's awkward, but there's a difference. I think Deidre kind of made a point in saying that, you know, there's a difference from learning how to fight, and there's a difference of learning self-defense. You know, the element of surprise makes fools out of anybody. I've known many of martial artists that I remember I went to a call at a bar. This guy was a black belt. He was sitting at the bar, and he was doing kicks. He was showing off in the bar. We just kind of told him he needed to settle down. And we left the bar, and he got into an argument. He was showing off in front of this one guy that's in front of his girlfriend. And the guy that he was showing off with was a smaller guy. And so the guy pulled out some card. I've never seen these cards before. I don't know if you have one, DJ. Maybe you do. But it said that he was a black belt, you know. And he put his card back in his wallet. So that was supposed to mean something very important to this guy.
Card.
Oh, okay. but anyway, as soon as the guy turned around, the guy hit him in the head with a bottle. And so when we got there, we were calling the ambulance to come, you know, come get this guy. He was unconscious. And I know other people that are world champions that put themselves in a situation where they got knocked out in the bar. There's just things you should and shouldn't do. It's a lifestyle. It's not about being tough. It's about having your sense of awareness. And, you know, if you got a good spirit, I mean, because I'm not looking to try to hurt somebody. If somebody gets hurt trying to hurt me, that's not my fault. I can tell you I believe that the arts work, because 3 days before an incident, there was an incident on the border where one of my students, I was teaching them gun defense and gun retention. So I'm teaching them how to keep people from taking a gun if he has it and stopping somebody if they have a gun, so it was close quarters. And a guy walked into on the border with an AR-15 and a 357 Magnum. And people are running out of the place, and the two bouncers are at the door fighting with this guy, and they're trying to get the AR-15. And they called Marcus over there, and at that time, Marcus was going to leave, but he remembered I was training him, so he said, I'll go try to help him out. And so now at this time, the guy goes for his 357 on his hip. And Marcus grabs the gun, grabs the wrist as the guy has the gun, and turns it, breaks the guy's wrist, and takes the gun. Now, Franklin Police Department were out there. They didn't come inside. One thing about police, they don't trust citizens so much. And so they weren't coming in until they get the proper intelligence. It's going to be up to the people inside to do their due diligence and get this matter taken care of. And so he was able to do that. He got a citizen's award from the Franklin Police Department in the bar. I think they gave him a chunk of money. And then I had another incident where I worked with an officer, and I was just showing him how to throw knee strikes from the lead knee versus the rear knee. And he was attacked on the streets. Long and short of it, he ended up knocking the guy out. He fell down. He was knocked out, but he got up before the other guy and ended up breaking the guy's jaw. But I mean, there's a lot of ways of learning things, and I try to work with people just to, you know, just give them options. And the more options you have and the more you practice, I mean, the better you get. And like I said, you have to kind of create situations. It's about being flexible. So there's a lot of things that we can do, and, you know, we continue training myself and Tony and Ricky. We were doing some training a little earlier, and that's just something that we do weekly, and I'm always just searching for more knowledge. It's a journey. It's a lifestyle. It's just the way I live. I don't see it any other way. I can't see why other people don't do it.
We had a program last week on food, and we talked a little bit together about how food plays a role in preparing people for this type of physical contact. Can you share any information with us about that?
DJ, you want to take that?
I'm sorry. The question was about how diet,
how food helps us with our training in regards to the energy that we have and what we put out as far as our efforts.
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I just did a podcast a couple of days ago about that very thing, how it's so important to know how, you know, to eat, to live. You know, a lot of people think we live in order to eat or whatever, but no, we have to really, especially as we mature in age, and it would be nice to learn it even sooner, but, you know, before we start getting the different health problems and things like that, especially some that are, you know, real familiar with African Americans, and as far as, like, you know, heart disease and, you know, those kind of things, that diet is so important with everything. I mean, because there are certain foods that, you know, give you energy, and, you know, and I know that a lot of people now are talking more about, like, you know, going to plant-based diets. Now, I am not a vegan, but, and I don't really, the only meat that I still kind of, that I still eat now, I do
this,
like,
conference
ground
has reached its maximum duration and will end in 1 minute.
It says our conference is about to end. But in answer to your question, yes, food and diet is absolutely essential to martial arts training and to your spiritual life and to everything, because, like I said, it's all mind, body, spirit. It's all about taking care of the temple. And taking care
exactly.
of the temple, we have to put the right things in the temple in order for it to get the maximum performance.
Yeah, true. I mean,
Are there some foods that you would suggest that seem to be better, and those are that you stay away from?
I think our call is about to. Is our call about to cut off?
No, I think we're good. I don't know why that came up. But,
oh, okay.
You know, I basically go with a plant-based diet. You know, I gave up on meat maybe 6 years ago.
This call may be recorded.
I just
want to
make sure that both of y'all have a lot to offer, man.
Hello? Hello?
Because people don't know.
Hello?
Brother Harsh, you are on.
Hello, you said I'm on?
Yeah, you're on. Everybody, there's Dr. James is on, you're on, somebody else.
Okay, all right. Uh-huh. Something happened, it cut me off and it said I was off the phone.
No, you're on the phone.
I just called back. Okay, Deidre?
Now she's dropped. I think she hung up.
Okay. All right.
But you're on the air.
Okay. Well. Okay. We'll try some callers if we have any. 215-490-9832. Any calls or questions or comments? If not, I'm just going to give thanks again to our sponsors, EDOC Advance. It's a website concerned to provide a place to go to get answers to our health and medical concerns, the questions and answers by our health professionals, those who are knowledgeable about helping us to make decisions about your personal health that makes sense to you. And that's at www.evocadvice.com. Hello, Deidre?
Hello? Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened. I'm just going to finish this announcement to our sponsors. We do not replace your health professionals or provide your care, but we can help you become a better consumer so that you can get the best information to make a truly informed decision. We network with other health professionals throughout the country, and we bring that information to you. Sponsors are welcome. Do you have a service you want others to know about? Have you written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. You can email us at Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa Think at Outlook.com. Okay, Deidre, still with us here?
Yes, I'm back.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. All right. I don't know what happened before. I know we talked about, you know, the food and, you know, you had the show, but we also talked about, you know, meditation.
Yes.
A lot of people don't understand what that has to do. You know, I mean, that's just, I dealt with the situation prior to me being involved in a shooting incident, but my teacher had me meditating, eyes open, eyes closed, so forth and this and that. And a lot of times people will say, well, you know, blind people, they have greater senses than the average person because, you know, they have to move around and, you know, they need help and they have to learn how to help themselves. And I said, no, their senses aren't any greater. It's just that they pay attention to detail. I said, but you don't have to do that, so you don't focus that way. And it's just a focus and a concern that we do with a lot of everyday things, you know, that make us a little better and makes things easier for us. And that's what it's all about, taking a simpler path, making better decisions for so many things that we do. You know, I know a lot of the techniques that I learned through different styles, I learned from just doing things from one system to another system. I mean, there's just a difference. And some systems are very closely related, but I've also learned to just do my own thing in regards to a lot of things. I mean, once you understand the concepts, you know, and the principles, and kind of makes life easy for you. You found that to be true for yourself? I mean, I don't know what it takes to go to a second degree.
It all wraps back around to, first of all, the discipline, what your personal goals are, what you want to get out of it, and how deep you want to go into it. Because you can go real deep into it and get some really good results, but it's not going to be easy. It's going to require the discipline and a made-up mind, which will make it then, you know, a way of life. And that's what it's about.
That's really important, what you just said, a made-up mind, because I know so many people, they start something and they stop, and, you know, with so many different things. And like you said, it's a discipline. It's a way of life. It's the way that you choose to live. And I see that you're just on a path that I'm just in love with. I'm like, wow. I remember you and Ellie back in the day, and we talked earlier. I was confused with Rosalind, but I remember you guys working out and kicking. You know, we would be sparring in the ring and everything. You guys get in there and do your thing, and
And you know, and that's when I was like, man, it's got to be more to it than this, because you guys were doing some sweeps, takedowns, different moves, things like that. And I was like,
that had to be about, what, 30 years ago?
Yeah, it was. But
I remember
I just remember, and I was like, well, because you were one of the, you two were one of the only girls that were going to, coming down there.
Yeah. They would put us on those fight cards, you know, to do the exhibitions and stuff like that.
Right, that's right.
That was about, wow, that was a long time ago. But like I said, a way of life, you know.
Go look at some of my old VHS tapes, because I know I got some of you guys on video.
I would love to see that.
I didn't have any children or anything.
Yeah, that was a long time. I remember that.
You were good though, because you guys were high kickers, and you really. So that was special.
And I just wanted to add this too. Another thing that, you know, martial arts is, like I said, it's a way of life for me. So Mr. Warren gave me a great foundation. I am forever indebted to him for the foundation that he gave me. And I've always been the kind of person that I'd like to continue to, wherever I'm at in life, no matter what it is, I'd like to continue to learn, you know, to continuously learn and learn and learn. You know, so it doesn't stop when you get to the black belt level. That's really when it just begins, because there's so much more to continue to learn, you know, so that I know where my home base is. I know where my dedication lies. At the same time, there's nothing wrong with broadening your horizon. So if you have an opportunity for anybody out there listening to learn more, different styles or different ways of, you know, eating or different, you know, just different philosophies or whatever your spirit is yearning for, follow that thing. You know, don't be stunted by, you know, what somebody else might have to say or might think about it or whatever. This is your life. You get one opportunity that we know of to live it, and we have to search out what is best for us individually, or search out your own soul salvation. So if you know you want to learn more different ways to, you know, just to make yourself a better person, and so that you can then turn around and it's all about service. And if you're not giving it back, you know what I'm saying? Then, like Muhammad Ali said, our service here is, you know, that's the rent that we pay on earth, you know, the service to others. So we want to be able to give back to people, and like you're doing, you know, and like I'm doing, and you know, to pay it forward, and like Mr. Warren did over and over again, and it just keeps on going. It keeps recycling.
Yeah. Tell you that,
and it doesn't stop.
I'm going to have to close out, and let me thank you all for joining us today. And I want to also thank the Sankofa Council for support of the program and for sharing their vision for the unity following Afrocentric principles and helping us to learn and for us these principles in our lives to restore the greatness and share with us our ideals for the future and program for Sankofa Council. gmail.com. Consider becoming a member of our Sankofa family. Visit our sponsor, www.ebotadvice.com. And good night. Stay safe. Sister Dee Dee, the Sankofa family. Until next time, peace and blessings to you all. Thanks again, Mr. Warren, Deidre Cole, Tony Henry, Vicky Burr. Confused competitors who think that they're making up all the rules. Fool.
losing the game, laying an insane. It's a shame I gotta do it, but I remain the same.